Greetings, ladies and managers, and welcome to the latest narration of the web series, The Survivor Becomes a Dungeon. If you're new to the series, there is a playlist listed down below in the description. And as always, I hope that you enjoy. Chapter 123. Bitmori Point of View. The trio of what I now know are adventurers were an odd but friendly sort. I suppose you would have to be a bit odd to willingly risk your life on what's likely a daily basis for money. They were fairly quiet during the majority of our walk, likely out of respect and maybe a small amount of intimidation based on the image that they conjured for me. Regardless, with just a little bit of encouragement, I managed to get them talking as I asked questions about the town we were going to. Who has since introduced himself as Rats did most of the talking since he was apparently the local of the trio. He called the place Sunspot Keep. It was a fortress that was built nearly 1,000 years ago and has since developed into a thriving but relatively small city. It's not much when compared to the capital of the hegemony, however. He's proud of his frontier town and speaks highly of the people he's grown up around. It was around then that the guy in the robes who introduced himself as Cecil pitched in, telling me about the local guild that handled all the mercenaries and adventurers in the area, as well as about what services the local businesses offered. I could tell that he was not so casually fishing for some information on what I intended to do during my stay in town, which I didn't mind, since it seemed that he wanted to endear himself to me as much as I wanted to do to them before this whole ordeal of mistaken identity. The pale canine girl, who turned out to be some kind of dogkin rather than a wolfkin, introduced herself as Lily for the sake of being polite. She didn't say much besides the occasional grunt or hum in response to passing comments from the other two, more intent on listening and looking around than being part of any sort of conversation as far as I could tell, which I can relate to. She seemed to be clearly fond of her two friends, and I get the impression she often finds other people as tolerable or not tolerable and isn't sure what to make of me yet. From what I know so far, while there is no dungeon around this town, the untamed wildlife of the frontier and Lichtrin's Folly provide plenty of opportunities to hunt for materials and food. However, with that said, there is still a stable farming and ranching culture around the fort, with food being brought in from the farmers in small villages that are under the fort's protection. Beyond that, there is a bountiful mine nearby. While it isn't considered a dungeon in itself, there's a steady work to serve as guards for local miners, due to it having connections to various underground biomes that have monsters and aggressive flora that occasionally surface. All in all, it's generally a quiet town, but there's always something to do to keep the money and materials moving. It wasn't much longer until we crested the hilltop and a massive clearing filled with farmland and other buildings came into view. A fort sitting in the middle of it all with two layers of stone walls, based on one I can see. Residences and businesses reside in between the outer and inner rings of the fort, with the fort itself residing in the inner ring. I can't help but take a moment to admire the view. It may not be anything like my home world, but the idea that I could see a stable and thriving town like this just fills my heart with a feeling of joy that I can't properly describe. It took everything I had not to run forward like an excited child, and race to see the town close up and be around all the people. Maybe if I was alone. But alas, I now have an image to maintain and thus follow the trio of adventurers down into the outskirts of the frontier town. It was late in the afternoon and the streets were moderately busy with activity. People coming home from work, others going to work, with all sorts of vendors hawking various goods and knickknacks along the main road. I'm vaguely reminded of the border markets back in my grandfather's hometown and am filled with several lifetimes worth of nostalgia. Sure, the languages and cultures were different, but there's no mistaking that ambience, that's for sure. There were many looks tossed my way as we walked among the people, though as far as I could tell, it was mainly glances of curiosity as they mainly looked at Lugosi with interest as he walked closely to my left. Braley still rode his back, eagerly looking at all the new people and even mewing at curious children who walked close by. As for Bismori, he ducked away into my shadow as soon as he realized just how many people would be around and decided he'd rather stay out of sight rather than deal with the crowd. As we neared the walls, I could sense Cecil stealing glances at me as he seemingly built up the nerve to talk to me again. I offered him a small smile, pretending to notice the third glance when I quirked a brow at him. "What is it, Cecil?" He stiffened at being caught, but smiled as he eagerly grabbed the opportunity to engage in conversation with me as he stepped up closer beside me.
Great mage, I don't mean to be forward, but what should we call you? I understand if you don't want to give us your real name for the sake of anonymity, but we still need to call you something. That was,
fair enough. I suppose being the nameless stranger wouldn't get me very far, all things considered. I was about to just give them my name when I had a second thoughts. After all, Vitmori will soon be known as the Druid of Lictrin's Folly. If I build a name during the expedition of mine, or better or worse, it is likely be easier for me to go by a different name if I need to travel again. A different name. Damn. After naming so many others, why can't I think of another name for myself?
You can call me Vito, I say after a minute of mulling it over.
Cecil grins with clear delight as he bobs his head.
Very well, Vito. Do you already have a place where you plan to spend the night?
He asks curiously as we stepped into the line as we approached the gate of the outer ring of the fort town. I, of course, had some memories of how things worked in this world and knew I had to find an inn of some kind if I wanted a place for the next night or two to work from, especially since I didn't want my cubs or Lugosi to have to stay on the streets while I handled things. I didn't plan on leaving right away, at least, since I did need to shop around to complete my look and get my hands on more of the local currency for potential expenses and general buying power.
Well, as I mentioned, I've never been here before. I then looked at him more directly to offer a bit of a smile. Where are you staying?
Cecil looked clearly delighted by the question, standing a little straighter as the line moved forward.
We're staying at the Guild's apartment complex. It's quite comfortable with a number of useful amenities, he explained before considering something. However, as you aren't affiliated with our Guild and likely not registered to the continent's listing given your desire for anonymity, you won't be able to get an apartment for yourself, especially since there is a reserve for adventurers who intend on staying in the area for at least 2 weeks or months at a time. But you can stay with us, he mentioned excitedly, though that earned him a disapproving look from both of his friends.
I chuckled a bit, but shook my head at his offer. I definitely wouldn't be taking him up on that offer, even if the others approved.
Thanks, but no thanks, novice. Well, I certainly appreciate the offer. I need my space.
At that, Rance let out a sigh of relief before looking over at me.
I can help you find a good inn, one that will allow your familiars to join you,
he offered, seemingly needing a moment to find the word to describe my beasts. Familiars, eh? I'll need to remember that term.
Thank you. I'll have to trouble you with that then,
I say as I bob my head at Rance's offer. Though Cecil looks clearly dejected by my decision. Soon after, we were near the head of the line as we approached a row of four guard stations. It reminded me of a customs station at an airport. There were guards posted all around, though it didn't look like they were at all vigilant to me. It seemed like today was just another day for these people, and they clearly weren't expecting anything to happen. From what I can tell, most of their attention was given to the incoming merchants and supply caravans, shooting the shit with most of the drivers and casually inspecting the outermost crates in only some of the carts, or even bags of some of the travelers. If this is how lax they are, then I can't even imagine how often things are allowed to slip by. When it came to be our turn, the trio approached as a group and I followed closely behind as we walked up to one of the guard stations. The guard in question clearly recognized the trio, though gave me and Lugosi an odd look as he checked me out and noted my lack of boots.
Hey, you three, how'd the hunt go and, who's your new friend?
He asked as he glanced over at me again. I looked over to Cecil, wondering just how he intended to get me through the gates without being scrutinized by the guards like he said he would. Cecil just flashed a small smile as he leaned forward on the guard station and silently placed down 3 silver pieces before speaking up.
The hunt went well. This is Mr. John Smythe, he said simply before putting it away.
The guard smiled a little more casually, placing his hand over the coins while writing something down in his logbook.
I see. Welcome to Sunspot Keep, Mr. Smythe. I hope your stay here is uneventful, he said almost pleasantly before waving us along.
I couldn't help but be vaguely amused by the whole exchange. It was painfully simple to get past the guards without much scrutiny. But again, I likely wouldn't have been able to do that all by myself. Between the trio being known and likely trusted by the guards, along with the bribe, the guards were willing to look the other way and allow me to enter without being checked. As we made our way through the gates, I was greeted by an equally busy main road, with peoples of all sorts making their way to wherever they needed to be. The first thing I noticed was the increase in quality when it came to the overall infrastructure. There looked to be some kind of street lights with crystals instead of light bulbs. The roads were probably paved, whereas most roads outside the wall and beyond the main road looked to be dirt and gravel. The buildings looked better designed and much more maintained. That's not to say the buildings outside the walls weren't nice and maintained. There was just a more noticeable difference in the effort, it seems. The people looked better too. Again, not by much, but it was noticeable if you were to look for it. It was like the difference between upper middle and lower middle class earners. They were both middle class, but one group bought name brands while the other bought generic ones. I'm vaguely reminded that I am again without boots, but that'll be something I can take care of later. Looking at the trio, I follow after them as they seem to have a clear destination in mind. So, what was that all about at the gate? The trio looked vaguely surprised by the question before Rand snapped his fingers in realization.
That's right. You said you've never been here before. Of course you wouldn't know, he reasoned before offering a kind smile. Regarding the business at the gate, well, money, might, and merit are everything here, he explained as he held up a finger for each thing he mentioned. For those who aren't known or established merchants, mercenaries, or adventurers, there's a 9 copper tax to enter the city, and you're often subjected to a physical and magical screening to ensure that you are not a threat. Of course, if you are a local and have identification to prove it, that tax is only 2 copper pieces, and there is no search. He then shrugged a bit before flashing a small smile back at me. Lulu is good at judging character and doesn't think that you're a bad guy. You may be some kind of powerful mage, but we would have ditched you and taken the loss of our goose if we'd sensed something was off about you, even if Cecil protested. He mused before looking ahead as he reapproached the rather grand-looking building. There were a number of armored individuals milling about, eating and drinking at various tables, looking at boards with notices, or talking to a variety of receptionists. We didn't stop inside, though, instead going around the building and approaching some sort of store with a number on it. Cecil piped up this time, as he took a placard with the same number as the stall.
Vito, if you can place the balls and blood in this stall, I'm going to go turn in the results of our hunt, he explained diligently while opening the stall doors, taking a key that had been left in the keyhole as he watched and waited. I did so, carefully stacking the balls and placing the jars of blood around the stall as neatly as I could manage while the trio looked on, still seemingly impressed by the display. However, once I finished, Lily grunted almost expectantly as she watched me. Cart, she said in a soft, almost whispering voice.
Right, if you can leave the cart with Lily, she'll go put it in our storeroom while I help you find an inn, Rance explained while Cecil locked up the stall and made his way off into the building we passed. Ah, of course, I replied as I gently set the small cart out for them, Lily taking it up by the handles as she walks off and leaves me alone with Rance. Well, alone with Rance, Lugosi, and Fraley.
Rance watches her go off before turning to look up at me.
Come on, I know a good place. I kind of grew up around the family, and I know they would be willing to put up with your familiars at a reasonable price if I vouch for you, he explained as we waved me along. Sounds good to me, I mentioned agreeably, patting Lugosi's head and Fraley's back before moving to follow after Rance.
As we walked and weaved through the hustle and bustle of the town, Rance would occasionally steal glances back at me, but not saying much until another few minutes had passed and he looked at me again.
Listen, I know I probably don't have a place to ask this of you, but, well,
he scratched the back of his head before looking at me again.
Gave Cecil the time of day. He was really excited to meet someone like you and is hoping to at least learn something from you or get a little bit of advice. I don't know if that's a big ask since I don't know much about magic, but he's usually not this outgoing and confident.
I couldn't help but offer a kind smile as I simply bobbed my head.
I'll be around for a couple of days at least. I don't know what exactly I can offer him, but I'll see what I can do.
At that, Ron flashed me a small smile.
Thanks, Vito. Come on, let's get you to that inn.
End of chapter. Chapter 124, Vidmori Point of View. To say that the inn was nice felt like an understatement. Or maybe it was just that I was so used to such a low standards of living after decades of living through an apocalypse that I had forgotten what decent living was like. Even the sleeping areas I made for the people back in the Haven feel spartan when compared to the room of the inn I found myself staying at. I really should spend some time putting together a good collection of quality bedding, blankets and pillows to improve day-to-day living. The room was simple in regards to the layout, a single bed, a dresser and a single suspended lamp. The lamp had a simple-looking crystal instead of something like a candle. That would illuminate the room with the tap of a button on the wall by the door. The room was on the third floor and had an actual glass window that could be opened and closed, accompanied by a set of olive-green curtains. The mattress itself was a relatively thin thing stuffed with wool or perhaps some kind of cotton that was then covered by clean grey sheets. It's a shame that I can't enjoy the experience of actually lying in bed. While I can tell it's soft, there's just an odd disconnect where I can't feel the comfort or relief of getting off my feet and laying on my back. Though the cubs seem to enjoy the bed, Vasmori and Freyli kneading their claws into the mattress while they audibly rumble with delighted purring. The skins and furs they used to sleep on must seem like hard floors in comparison. Even Lugosi looked rather comfortable as he lay on the bed behind them, sleeping soundly after the day of running that he'd gone through. The cubs, for their part, were resting near his belly on what free space remained on the mattress itself. The day was close to ending, as far as I could tell, with the sun nearing the horizon, yet the streets were still active with people going on this way and that. I figured now that I'm on my own, I might as well try and get some of my personal shopping done before most of the stalls actually close for the day, leaving Lugosi, Vasmori, and Freyli in my room. I made my way downstairs and came into a fairly busy dining area slash lounge room where a number of people ate and conversed. There was an eclectic variety of individuals in the room with a number of various races being represented here. Colorful adventurers drinking loudly at the bar, caravan guards eagerly eating in groups clustering around large room tables, and a few hooded figures seemingly brooding in some odd corner, keeping to themselves as they quietly sipped at a drink or ate. Honestly, the fact that I may be the strangest one here simply due to the fact that I'm a fancy wooden man who's actually a dungeon core from another world is an odd feeling to come to terms with. As I pulled up my hood and made my way to leave the inn, I was actually stopped by the innkeeper's son, a strapping young man who has some kind of half-orc with a tan skin. I couldn't remember his name, though he had remembered mine as he flashed a toothy grin. "Mr. Vito, when do you be having dinner with us tonight?" I flashed a small smile as I looked down at him from under my hood. "Not tonight, no. I don't need to eat much after all," I mused while slightly patting my stomach. "Though if you could bring some meat up to my room, I'm sure my familiars would be happy to enjoy the treat." It's not like I needed to eat often either, but Lugosi worked hard today, and the cub should still eat plenty to grow big and strong. "They're docile and very well behaved, so don't worry about bothering them," I quickly added reassuringly as I could manage. I could sense him feeling vaguely nervous as he recalled seeing Lugosi, but he just bobbed his head and gave me a thumbs up. "Understood. I'll see what I can put together," he enthused before stepping away and tending to some other guests. Now that I'm free, I made my way out and just started walking. First thing first, I need to look more like a regular person. So what that means is that I need to get some boots and gloves. Up till now, I've somehow managed to avoid outright touching anyone or being directly touched, and nobody has really commented on how my footsteps sound like a clacking of wood on stone rather than thumps of meat on stone or wood. Though that might be thanks to how lightly I walk anyways. That would not last forever, so the sooner I have those things, the sooner I can better blend in. Taking a mental inventory of things, I had spent 4 silver on a room and board for 2 nights at the inn. It was a nice room, and this looked like a nice part of town. Even with the apparent discount, I was likely staying at the place that had a hotel rates rather than motel rates. At the moment, I was left with a total of 7 silver pieces and 12 copper pieces, which didn't sound like a lot when I considered just how much I gave out to the sinners and Basti to make sure their potential expenses were covered. Thinking of the conversion rate for the currency of this continent, 30 copper equaled 1 silver and 15 silver equaled 1 gold. There are apparently bigger coins, but I don't plan on handling them anytime soon. As for the coins themselves, copper pieces were no bigger than pennies, but they were strangely complex for something that looked stamped in mass production. Then again, they might have had some magic or advanced minting process that helped with that. The silver pieces themselves were around the size of a nickel, and the gold pieces looked close to quarters to me. The coins also weren't straight up copper, silver, or gold, but a thin blend of metal specifically minted into the various coin types, which reminded me of the way we did things back home. This likely aided in preventing people from melting the coins down and helped against counterfeiting. I visited a cobbler first and picked out a pair of ready-made brown boots that were close to my size. It was made with some kind of leather laces, which were used to adjust them to better fit around my calves so they wouldn't slide off. I was moderately surprised to find that they offered a wide selection of socks that looked rather nicely made, but I didn't bother since it's not like I particularly needed them for comfort or health reasons. The boots were 18 copper pieces, so I ended up breaking the silver before moving on. From there, I found my way into a store that specializes in traveling equipment, after having visited 3 different general stores for a pair of good gloves. Well, I was vaguely surprised to find a specialized store like this. It was set up next to an armory that catered to mercenaries and adventurers, so it was likely geared towards servicing the needs, which is probably why all the good gloves were here. While I initially came just for the gloves, all the other equipment just kept catching my eyes as I ended up shopping around for some more to help supplement my look. For the grand total of 4 silver pieces and 17 copper pieces, I ended up buying myself a pair of black leather gloves that went halfway up my forearm, a brown satchel that I slung over my shoulder, so it sat on my hip like a messenger bag, a canvas tent with blankets as well as 50-foot bundle of rope and a pair of knives in case I needed to field dress anything. Lastly, I managed to set myself up with a leather belt that had a loop of leather that hung off my right hip, which allowed me to openly wear my falchion that Trisha had made for me. I say openly, but I'm still concealing it with my cloak. But at the very least, I don't look like an unarmed, undressed anymore. By the time I was finished with my shopping, the sun was halfway down the horizon, filling the sky with an array of purple and orange hues. Now that I've spent money, I figured it was time to make some money. Well, I did spy a couple of pawn shops here and there, where I could possibly sell some junk armor I still had lying around in my storage from the bandits all those weeks ago. I needed more money if I wanted to do even half the things I promised I would do for the Haven. Thankfully, I still had a ton of unprocessed ores that I could possibly sell to the miners' guild around here. The only problem with that is that apparently the branch that deals with the miners is outside the walls, but the main office is in the inner city where I'm at. Maybe if I go into the main office while still pretending to be an incognito powerful mage, I could get them to deal with me directly instead of having to go out past the gates and risk being hassled if I wanted to come back in for the night. Miner's Guild, Guildmaster. Guildmaster Tilsim, POV. The dwarven man sighed with frustration, looking at various reports and orders that were gradually starting to get back up due to current circumstances. While most metal refinement and production went through unimpeded, they've been sorely lacking when it comes to meeting quotas for the Wolfram orders ever since their Crucible Master fell ill. He was one of the only ones who could manage the intense flames needed to refine Wolfram in bulk to keep up the demand for the metal in question. His assistants do well enough to keep things running without him, but they could only refine so much before their weaker mana hearts and mana rings get drained. Perhaps it is true that the guild relied too much on one man, and they'll certainly need to restructure, recruit, and train more guild members to harness fire magic as soon as possible if they don't want this to happen again in the future. That is, if the Crucible Master ever recovers, which is looking doubtful with each passing day. Reaching for a bottle of something strong he had in his desk drawer, he's vaguely startled by a knock at the door to his office. Committing to grabbing the bottle, he also grabbed an iron cup and began to pour himself a barrel-aged bourbon. Enter! In the next moment, he heard the latch turn as one of his receptionists stepped in. It was a squirrelkin woman whose name was escaping him at the moment.
Excuse me, Guildmaster. So sorry to trouble you, but we have an odd client who is wishing to sell a lot of ore. He's not a miner and claims that the ore doesn't come from a local mines. Due to how suspicious he is, I figured you ought to know, she explained, looking rather uncertain as her tail flicked anxiously behind her.
Tilsim just sighed tiredly, glancing at the window as he noticed the sun's fading light on the horizon, taking the drink from his cup before gently setting it down.
He also came before we closed. Well, we had the least amount of traffic. Obviously, we had some sort of amateur scalper who likely came from a nearby territory. Could you do me a favor and start looking into reports from other guilds and see if there's a warrant on this guy? In the meantime, take him to one of the waiting rooms, and I'll see if I can't lure him into a trap and get the guards to seize his cart.
At that, the receptionist looked clearly relieved and bobbed her head eagerly.
You got it,
she enthused before closing the door behind him and hurrying off. In the next 10 minutes, Tilsim made his way to the waiting room, bottle in hand as he took a swig from it before letting himself inside. He didn't really have it in him to be especially courteous and professional for the criminal, and if the suspicious guy really was a scalper, he'd likely be willing to put up with the most things in order to make the sale. Looking around, he spotted a cloaked human man in his late 30s with a rather impressive air about him. His clothes didn't look like anything special, though they looked rather well made. Yet he carried himself with an air of confidence Tilsim wasn't expecting from an amateur scalper. As Tilsim stepped into the room, the man turned to look as he regarded him with vibrant green eyes. For a second, Tilsim felt as if his very soul was being measured before his feeling faded as quickly as it went. For a second, he wondered if he was being overly sensitive or on edge as he brushed the feeling aside.
Sorry for the wait. You caught me at a bad time, he expressed with a faux sincerity.
In reality, he was in no rush for this meeting as he sat on one of the couches in the meeting room, gesturing for the man to sit across from him in the opposing couch. The man just flashed a smile as he moved to take a seat, brushing his cloak back and settling in comfortably, though Talzin noted the empty loop that hung off the man's right hip, vaguely surprised that the man would seemingly come to his meeting unarmed considering the circumstances.
It is no problem, Guildmaster. It is my fault for coming in without an appointment, though I am grateful that you are seeing me despite the circumstances.
Tilsim just mentally facepalmed. Of course, he could have just had the guy wait until tomorrow. Then again, he might have tried to sell the ore elsewhere if he had trouble getting rid of it. He took another swig from the bottle before just smiling a bit as he shrugged.
What can I say? You caught me in a generous mood, despite the circumstances.
He parroted, setting the bottle down on the table between them before leaning back against the couch.
So, how much ore are we trying to offload, and what kinds?
He asked bluntly now, making it easier for the human to make the deal without dancing around the topic too much. The man reached into his cloak, and despite it being bunched up over his shoulder, he pulled out a hefty chunk of cleaned iron ore that couldn't have possibly been in their cloak a moment ago. It was as the man set the iron ore down on the table that Talzin realized he may not be dealing with an amateur at all.
Well, I know from the receptionist that you're buying iron ore at 4 copper a pound, but I need more than that, he said simply, before leaning back in his seat.
Tilsim couldn't help but feel a shudder traveling down his spine, his hand clenching his bottle as he realized that he was the one who was trapped here. He may have a decent manner heart and be a capable fighter, but he's definitely not armed and likely wouldn't be able to outrun the sky if something happened. He took a swig of the bourbon before narrowing his gaze as the human crossed from him.
And how much do you want?
The man flashed a small smile as he gestured at the iron ore between them.
Give me 9 copper per pound, and I'll refine it all for you. No waste, minimal impurities,
he offered as he seemed to relax even more. Tilsim opened his mouth to call the man a crook, a cheat, and yet that actually sounded reasonable. Not even that bad of an offer if the human handled all the labor and could actually guarantee that sort of quality. In fact, he was now having a hard time finding something to disagree with, beyond the fact that these ores were likely all stolen from somewhere.
What's the matter? Cat got your tongue?
The man asked almost teasingly as he smirked with amusement.
Or is it the fact that you think that I've stolen all of these ores or something?
At that, Tilsim tensed as he eyed the man warily again. But before he could say anything, the man continued.
Oh, come on now. It was obvious. As soon as I mentioned just how much ore I was planning on selling, the receptionist got all squirrely.
The man then shrugged a bit.
You won't find any records for this ore, though. It's from my own private mine, he explained rather nonchalantly. I haven't needed money in the last decade or so, but now that I'm traveling again, I need a little spending power. You can help me with that, right?
Tilsim was starting to get more and more of a feeling that this guy probably wasn't just some scalper. Doing his best to remain calm, he took another swig of bourbon before sitting up and looking at the human over more intently.
How much ore are you trying to sell?
The human looked thoughtful before shrugging a bit.
Well, I initially planned on selling 50 pounds, you know. Keep things relatively tame, but I think I'll sell 100 pounds. Do you think that you can handle that much?
Well, of course it could. They process close to that on a regular basis. Though 100 pounds of already refined iron.
How long until you have the iron ready?
The human hummed for a moment before smiling.
Show me a standard ingot and I'll see what I can do.
Something about that smile unnerved Tulsum, and if he didn't realize that the human wasn't in a good mood before now, he definitely was sure that he was pretty pissed about being treated like some kind of criminal.
I see. Give me a moment, he said quietly as he stood, making his way to the doors of the waiting room,
only to be greeted by a squad of guardsmen being led by the Skurrican receptionist, who was looking rather worried.
Guildmaster, I couldn't find anything on the reported scalpers, but I got the guards here ready to take care of him,
she explained as her fluffy tail wiggled frantically. The guardsmen looked at the guildmaster expectantly. They weren't here for a fight, just to arrest some thieving scalper. But that was not the situation anymore. Not by a long shot, as he stared wide-eyed and choked on a response at first. Glancing back in the room at the human, he seemed as calm as could be, despite the amount of manpower gathered here. He finally cleared his throat a bit and looked up to the guards.
Thank you all for making the trip, but this has been all a big misunderstanding. Tulsum
started to say, realizing he hadn't even gotten the human's name before now, as he glanced behind him again. The human just smiled a bit as he leaned forward on the seat, resting his elbows on his knees.
John Smythe, he said simply. Right, Mr. Smythe is a legitimate businessman. There is no trouble here, he expressed to the guards before he then looked over to the Skrullkin receptionist and cleared his throat a little more. Could you fetch Mr. Smythe an iron ingot? He would like to have an example of the processed material.
The guards did look a little confused for their part, but they weren't about to argue with an influential man like the Miners Guild Guildmaster. If he said things were all right, then they were all right. In short order, they filed out and left the guild hall while the Skrullkin woman rushed off to do as he asked. As Tilsum looked back at Mr. Smythe, he offered a rather sheepish smile as he ran his fingers through his beard in an attempt to keep himself calm.
Sorry about her. She tends to get excited over the littlest of things. I truly hope you found no offense.
The human merely shrugged again as he smiled, leaning back into his seat.
It's fine. I know I am an up one, that's for sure. That reminds me. I remember a group of teens calling me a traveling eccentric. I suppose that is a rather fitting descriptor.
And there it was, the answer to the growing feeling of unease that the bourbon wasn't settling. An eccentric. In his guild, it's only by the grace of gods that he hasn't crossed whatever line this man had drawn in the sand. Swallowing to himself, he set the bottle of bourbon down and approached the cabinet. As he procured a bottle with a liquid as black as a shadow before glancing over to Mr. Smythe.
Sir, would you perhaps enjoy a drink with me while we wait?
He offered out as a genuine sincerity as he grabbed two crystal glasses and uncorked the bottle.
It's Everblack, a rather potent brew, he explained
with a dejected little shrug. This was the only thing that could possibly help him keep his nerves now. The human smiled a little more, starting to shake his head before looking thoughtful.
You know what? Sure, make mine a triple.
Tilsum tensed again, though more out of shock than anything, as he just finished pouring himself a double that he intended on nursing. Though he wasn't about to argue with an eccentric as he poured the man a triple and brought over the glass, setting one down in front of the man on the table before taking his own place back on the couch. The human eyed the drink curiously before licking his lips a little, taking up the crystal glass and swirling its contents. Though, in the next moment, he downed the whole thing, tilting his head all the way back as he emptied the glass before setting it back down. He hummed, seemingly in delight, before sighing heavily as a small spout of flame spewed from his mouth. This seemed to amuse him even more as he chuckled to himself. Tilsum now couldn't help but wonder if Mr. Smythe is even human at all, nursing the black brew as he sighed a little more. After a long few moments, the receptionist finally returned with the ingot in hand, much to Tilsum's relief, as she held it out to him. Though at that, he merely shook his head and silently gestured for her to give it to Mr. Smythe, which she did, rather cheerfully in fact, as she apparently took Tilsum's reassurance that Mr. Smythe was actually a businessman.
Thank you,
the human mentioned fairly cheerfully, as he took up the ingot and looked it over, twirling it around in his hand. when it suddenly disappeared into thin air. Tilsim couldn't quite believe his eyes and wasn't sure if it was a sleight of hand or magic. But then he didn't even see a spell being cast. The human then reached out to the Skurkin receptionist before seemingly pulling an ingot out from behind her ear as he chuckled a little more.
"Thank you for your help. Sorry for scaring you earlier," he offered rather sincerely.
The receptionist, for her part, clearly amazed as she kept looking between Tilsim and the ingot of iron, or rather, before looking at Mr. Smythe and flashing a warm smile.
"It's okay, Mr. Smythe. I apologize for thinking that you were a criminal," she said rather bluntly, lowering her head a little before looking back to Tilsim again. If you excuse me, Guildmaster, I must get back to my closing duties."
With that, she made her way out of the meeting room, excitedly waving her goodbyes to Mr. Smythe before stepping out of sight. Before Tilsim could ask Mr. Smythe how long it'll take for the ingots to be ready again, the human stood and pulled a coffee table away from between them. He then took a knee before holding out his hand and closing his eyes. Tilsim watched on curiously as he took the time to try and find the words to ask what was happening. He suddenly realized that ingot after ingot of iron was suddenly appearing out of thin air, being neatly stacked up on some sort of pyramid until all 100 pounds of iron was standing between them. Once again, Tilsim was lost for words as he opened and closed his mouth a few times, setting his glass of Everback to the side before reaching out to touch the ingots themselves.
"By the gods, they're still warm!"
He looked between the metal ingots and Mr. Smythe, a brilliant little idea forming in his mind, as he finally flashed the first confident smile he could muster this whole conversation.
"Are you available for hire?"
End of chapter.
I would just quickly like to thank the T5 peeps, Dragon Soup, Cold War, Boomerwaffen, Severin Cerberus, Red Panda 121, Leslie 517, Bushmaster 177, Casper Arnholtz, Cam Maxwell, Sans the Skeleton, Lightjock, Dragzoon WRE, and Lord Azricol. Thank you very much.